Hey everyone, it's me, Amy Walter. Before we start the conversation, I wanted to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by the Cook Political Report. If you are interested in more of our great content, consider subscribing. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. Listeners can use the discount code ODD10, that's ODD, the number 10, to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is only available to new subscribers. Welcome to the Odd Years. I'm Amy Walter. Last year, around this time, as March Madness kicked into gear, there was one athlete everyone seemed to be talking about, Caitlin Clark. The then University of Iowa guard was on her way to leading her team to the NCAA finals, selling out stadiums everywhere she went and creating an unprecedented level of excitement around women's basketball. Interest that followed her to the WNBA, when she signed with the Indiana Fever. My guest, USA Today sports columnist Christine Brennan, is writing a book about Caitlin Clark called On Her Game, which tells the story of Clark's rise to become the most famous female team sport athlete in history. Christine has been a longtime chronicler and advocate for women in sports. She's also deeply interested in politics and has a keen understanding and appreciation for how sports and politics intersect. So I wanted to have Christine on to help tell the story of how laws like Title IX helped pave the way for a phenom like Caitlin Clark. But I also wanted Christine to reflect on where we are in this moment when it comes to politics and sports and gender. Now, these three topics have been intertwined in our culture forever, but the Trump era has brought it to a different level. I mean, his first few weeks in office alone have included an appearance at the Super Bowl, executive order banning transgendered athletes from competing in athletics. And now we have Canadians booing the national anthem at international hockey tournament as a response to Trump's threats to tariff and maybe even annex our northern neighbor. Christine Brennan is an award-winning national sports columnist for USA Today. She's a commentator for CNN, ABC News, and PBS NewsHour. And that book about Caitlin Clark is available right now for pre-order on Amazon. We'll have a link to it in our show notes. And it will be available wherever books are sold in early July. Okay, here's the show. Christine Brennan, hello.
Hello, Amy Walter. How are you?
This is so exciting that I finally get to interview you about all of the things that you are so good at. You've been covering sports for, should I say how long it is, or do you not want to?
Sure, honesty.
30 plus years, right?
30 plus, 40 plus years, yeah.
Okay, we can go 40 plus
years.
Yeah,
in fact, let's go to 40, it'll be 44, started in April of 81 at the Miami Herald. I was 12 at the time.
Well, but yes, of course.
Yeah, so yeah, it's 44 years, pretty cool, yeah.
And I really, you have no peer when it comes to your coverage of women and women in sport. And that's really where I want to start with you, because this intersection between politics and sport, it's been around for a long, long time. Politics and sports have long overlapped. But you have long said, I've heard you say this many times, that the first woman president will be a Title IX woman, a woman who benefited from Title IX. So talk to us about that. What does that mean?
Title IX was signed by Richard Nixon, as you know, in June of 1972. And that is the law that opened the floodgates for U.S. girls and women to play sports. Obviously, people were playing tennis and golf before that, and there were certainly, you know, high school clubs and occasional games being played in phys ed classes. But this was the moment where the nation basically said, we've got to give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons. Now, I don't want to get too Pollyanna, because for about 10 years, Title IX was completely ignored. You had football coaches, Big Ten, big broad-shouldered coaches, like, we don't want women playing sports, and we don't want them getting the same you know, letters that our football
and getting
players,
our money, right? Was that the big concern? It was about they're going to take our money our programs?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I think there was a news flash of a little bit of sexism and misogyny there in the 70s in football programs. And often the athletic director at a university had been the football coach. You know, there was a lot of ties there. So there was great concern that men's programs would be cut. Wrestling coaches were angry. Yes, by the way, obviously, of course, totally true. Some programs were cut. That was by athletic directors who failed miserably to understand them, that the time that they had, and try to work through the system and make sure they gave women an opportunity while not cutting men's sports. You're able to do it. Obviously, football is going strong to this day, 52 and a half years later, almost 53 years later, I guess. You know, men's basketball, clearly. But the idea was, if you get federal funding, which every school does, even private schools, you know, there's Pell Grants and all kinds of, you know, the roads get worked on by your government, et cetera, then you are, in some way or other, you are then subject to Title IX. And so it's only 37 words, but it truly, and the idea behind it first, Amy, was for law schools and med schools. It's a very simple thought. American taxpayers, men and women, are giving this money. How in the world can you then only use it for men? And so, you know, med schools, law schools, look at the result. More women, I believe, certainly many colleges, yes, maybe all, are now in med schools than men, and more than 50% women in law schools, many, many places.
Yes.
So
yes, I think it's now more women now in both, just overall, nationally,
yes,
the percentage of women in law and medical school exceeds that of men.
And that was certainly a Title IX. That was really the thought. Then a few years later, people started going, well, what about sports? And it's high school and college. And, you know, pretty much anyone who's listening or watching us probably has a daughter, a niece, a granddaughter, a sister, a wife, and a next door neighbor who is, you know, next door neighbor, a girl next door neighbor, who has, they watch come and go with their sports bag slung over their shoulder and switching uniforms in the car and then going on to the next sport. And so every American knows what we're talking about here. Think about it. You know, if you were driving, not that you would have been, would have been a tiny little kid in 72, but if people were driving by a field in the 70s, and they saw a girl there, the odds are she was there to tell her brother it was time to come home for dinner. She'd been sent by her mom or something. Get your brother and bring him back. Now, as you're driving through your neighborhood and you see a whole bunch of girls or women playing field hockey or lacrosse or rugby or a pack of 10 high school girls running a cross-country team, track team, whatever, you don't even give it a second thought. There's no double take. You know, it's like, of course. That's Title IX. And of course, it's not just about sports. It's about giving the other half of our country the opportunity to learn those life lessons from sports. Winning, even more important, losing. Teamwork, sportsmanship, leadership, cooperation, of course, physical fitness. What on earth were we thinking, Amy, as a nation, to deprive 50% of our country that opportunity? So I'll wave the flag now for those. There's three guys who still hate Title IX. They're under a desk somewhere in Montana. Come out, guys. It's over. It's over. Obviously, I'm being funny there. Sorry, Montana. But the idea being that we love this law. This law makes the nation better and stronger. It's a better country when we are giving girls and women that opportunity to learn those life lessons and stay healthy and be leaders and be wonderful colleagues and, you know, moms and teachers and business people and coaches, whatever combination they're going to be throughout their career, they'll be better at it because they played sports.
Right. And so your contention is that, again, I will say, for those of us in the Gen X generation and then going forward from there, we're beneficiaries of Title IX, right? So if you came of age in the late 70s, early 80s, you were more likely to have benefited from this, which suggests that the female president, if this is your contention, that because of those skills that you picked up on the field or on a court will translate later in life, including into politics, that the female president will be someone who played sports as a high schooler, or maybe she played in college, or right, that it will be somebody who is not of the baby boomer era.
Right. So I'm a baby boomer, kind of near the end. But I had sports in my life totally because I had my own personal Title IX. I had
dad.
My dad.
Yeah.
Right. And my mom, too, was totally supportive. And I'm, as you know, almost 6 feet tall, 5'11 and a half. And so, you know, I was playing sports with the boys, but we didn't have organized teams until freshman year of high school. And I was a six sport athlete in high school. Not because I was so good, but you just could play everything because no one really cared. And there was no idea of really going on to college or getting a scholarship or anything like that. So that was then. Absolutely. I'd say anyone born, well, you know, if you're in high school in the 80s and 90s, you're starting to get Title IX, a good dose of Title IX. And if you're born, say, like a certain basketball player who's born in 2002, wears number 22, you know, and that age group, and I have a niece who's a year younger, who's a great athlete in college, you know, then you're getting Title IX on full blast. So yeah. We're already seeing it. I was able to moderate a panel on the exact day of the 50th anniversary of Title IX, June 23rd of 2022. Tom McMillan organized this, the former congressman and Maryland men's basketball star. And among the panelists were Lori Trahan, congresswoman, who was on a volleyball scholarship.
Great volleyball player.
At Georgetown. And Susie Lee, the congresswoman from Nevada, who had been a swimmer. Sherry Bustos, who is now retired, I believe, right? But from Illinois.
Yep.
I believe her sports were basketball and volleyball.
Basketball, yeah.
And Sharice Davids, who is martial arts. I'm sure I'm getting the exact wrong thing she does, but, you know, the thing she does wrong, but mixed martial arts, I believe. So there I am moderating a couple other people, Val Ackerman, the first president of the WNBA, a few other people were on it, but four congresswomen, and I said that. I said, this is the future, as the audience looked at this. We were over, I think, at the Wharf or somewhere near there. The idea of Not one congresswoman, not two, not three, but four. And there's certainly many more that could have participated, that played sports. Anyone who's born like from, you know, late 60s on, as you know, because you're in that category, right? You got a chance to play sports, you were soccer, whatever. It was cooler. It was okay. It was fun. Your brother didn't laugh at you. You know, your brother probably was forced to come and watch you play, which, you know, a generation earlier, brothers would never have given the time of day to their sister's sports. And a mom or dad wouldn't have even required them to come and be on the sidelines. So, yes, absolutely. And I said it, and, you know, it's interesting. We're not talking politics here, but I will name two people from opposite ends of the spectrum. So on her campaign plane, maybe 08, maybe 16, Hillary Clinton was talking about playing basketball in high school in the Chicago suburbs. And she was talking about the 6-on-6 girl basketball. They wouldn't allow you to cross the center line because I guess they thought if you ran full court, you couldn't have children or you'd perspire or something. But Hillary Clinton was telling the story. I find the YouTube clip somewhere. I just remember seeing it. And it was really funny. And Hillary Clinton was born in 1947, I'm pretty sure. I think she's born in 47. And so there's that. Sarah Palin was born in 1964. And she was zipping all around Alaska. Her dad was her coach on some sports. I think she was a 3-4-5 sport athlete in high school. And tough as nails. Obviously, Hillary Clinton is also tough as nails. So from 1947 to 1964, the difference, again, forget the politics, but something for everyone in this conversation, obviously, it's look at the difference in terms of sports opportunities with two women who are obviously running for either the highest or the second highest office in the land. And there's going to be so much more of that because, as you said, it's popular. Girls want to play sports. The cool girls now are playing sports. Where back in the day, the cool girls were not playing sports. And for sure, those life lessons, those will translate in every way. Governors we're seeing, more congresswomen, more, you know, state reps, all of these women played sports. I'm not saying that they're Katie Ledecky or Caitlin Clark or Serena Williams, no, or Simone Biles. No, of course not. It's just that opportunity to play. And I think we will see, you know, Bill Bradley comes to mind, right, as just a great athlete at Princeton, basketball star, Olympic gold medalist, and then, of course, running for office. You know, the female Bill Bradley, so to speak. There'll be hundreds of them in this country over the next 20 to 30 years.
So, Christine, let's talk about this idea that you raised at the very beginning that everybody loves Title IX. What's wrong with who doesn't love this idea of giving women more opportunities? Look, we're in an era right now where we're seeing this idea of DEI being questioned, rolling back a lot of protections for different groups. We're hearing a lot about the frustrations of younger men, and that women, especially younger women, have been given opportunities that have been, and that it's men now that have been overlooked. We're seeing Title IX now being used by conservatives to say that, to justify bans on transgender athletes participating, specifically men participating, people who were born as men and transitioning or saying that they identify as women from playing in women's sports. So I am curious your take on this, because it feels like with women in sports, there has been so much progress, but feels like we're at an inflection point. Do you feel that too?
Oh, for sure. And in your world, the political world that you're in, course, I mean, that goes without saying, right? The Trump victory and the Trump administration, it's so many places. And certainly with people losing jobs and things like that, it's clearly can be more important than sports, right? Although this is sports, but it's also culture, and it's also...
That's right.
You know, it's...
That's right. Sports and culture and politics, they're all...
It's, what have we said? It's like the, you know, it's a 12-lane superhighway, right, where sports and culture meet.
Yep.
First of all, on the piece that you mentioned first, which was the idea of, you know, Title IX's either, like, gone too far or let's give boys a chance and all that. Well, first of all, boys, and I know you weren't saying this isn't the case, boys have chances. I mean... At school level, you know, nothing. Title IX is the most lenient law in the world. There's three ways to be compliant with Title IX. I'm not going to get into the weeds on that. But one of the three ways to be compliant with Title IX is to show that you're working towards compliance with Title IX. Could you imagine that with some, you know, Civil Rights Act or something? I mean, no one's been thrown in jail because of Title IX. Maybe there have been a fine or two over the 52 years, but I can't think of one. People have been dragging their heels. Most schools are still not in compliance with Title IX. I know that might shock people. And by that, I mean, you're supposed to, if your school is 55% female and 45% male on campus, then you're supposed to be spending 55% of your athletic department money on women and 45% on men. That's just not happening. So the idea of working towards it is the one that people, and I'm simplifying this, so any Title IX experts who are going to now email or tweet at me, it's fine, go ahead, but I'm simplifying it. No one needs to worry about boys' opportunities. The wrestling world, you may remember, of course, Dennis Hastert, the completely disgraced, you know, former Speaker of the House, and he was very upset about Title IX, he and other wrestlers were. Again, don't blame a great law for the incompetence of athletic directors who've had not 50 minutes, not 50 days, not 50 months, but 50 years to get a law, to figure out how to work with a law and still screwed it up. And most of the slashing and burning of men's sports, like Olympic sports, was happening not recently, but more, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
And that's terrible. No one wants to lose those opportunities for Olympic sports, men's or women's. But the facts just don't back that up. Clearly, there's an emphasis, as we know, on giving men and boys their voice back or whatever people want, like Mark Zuckerberg. That's out of my area of expertise, except to say they've got it in sports. We've just started a college football playoff. The money, the TV ratings are extraordinary. Men's basketball clearly doing great, although women's basketball, you know, one of the greatest stats ever was last year, Caitlin Clark's senior year, Iowa against South Carolina, that final, NCAA final, played in the afternoon, a Sunday afternoon, not prime time, got 18.9 million viewers. The next day the men played at night and had 14.8 million. Never before ever in my life I would have thought I could say that sentence. The women had 4 million more viewers than the men, but that was because of Caitlin Clark. So, but my point there is that men are doing just fine. Where we should worry, if you're worried about men's sports, is the Olympic sports. Because if we're going to start paying and do all these things with men's basketball and football, and women's basketball, volleyball, probably a few other sports, then what are we going to do with our Olympic sports? And there's real concern about them. So that would be men's golf, women's golf. That'd be baseball, be wrestling, swimming, men's and women's swimming, which, of course, is the feeder system for our Olympic team. We have to worry about that very top-heavy issue.
Worrying because they can't make money outside of their or in their sport or outside of their sport in the way that a football player or basketball player could. Is that what you're
saying? That and also the spending that's going to be happening for football. So if you have to spend $2 million to get a quarterback, which is, you know, the NIL money, but if now we're going to pay athletes as well, I mean, like really pay them, make them employees, then you're going to throw all your money probably at football and men's basketball, and again, some women's basketball. Well, then it sounds like doomsday, Chicken Little, sky's falling. People are going, oh, we don't believe it. Well, especially with the cuts the Trump administration's making on universities' federal funding already, which is not sports related. But now, if you're forcing an athletic department to make sure to pay incredible salaries to keep a good football team and a men's basketball, and again, women's and whatever, what happens to the budget? And there's great concern from experts that either become club sports or go to D3. You love D3. I love D3. But that doesn't compute in terms of... So there are great concerns about the Olympic feeder system, not for 2028 in L.A., but moving on, about what happens with sports like wrestling and swimming and track and field, which have been feeder systems for our Olympic teams, for just the U.S. and other nations. And so, yeah, it's a real problem if you're spending all the money on a couple sports, but that looks like where we are. There's way getting into this, but NIL, name, image, and likeness.
Yeah.
As you know, the Biden administration had mandated it needed to be under the umbrella of the university, in-house, so to speak, and governed by Title IX. The Trump administration has changed that. They're saying no Title IX restrictions, which means NIL money, you know, you could spend 90% of it on your football team. Let's make it 75% of your football team, 20% on your men's basketball team, and then 5% on your women's basketball team.
Right. So that's the real, if you're talking about women and in the next 10, 15 years as athletes, not just ones who want to go to the Olympics, but if I'm a really good softball player, which I was not, but played in college, and wanted to play at that level, you're suggesting that if I'm at a big school, there may not be the funding there in 10 or 15 years for those programs.
Well, exactly. Or now NIL, of course, if you're a female athlete, you've already been used to not getting the kind of money the men get, right? So that's, I think there's probably happy medium. I mean, I would love it to be Title IX related like the Biden administration wanted. The Trump administration just Wild West. So again, a Caitlin Clark or a Juju Watkins will make money, of course.
Of course.
She's still in college. But there won't be the mandate to look for those deals for your female athletes.
Okay, so that's how that works. So Christine, can you just give me and our listeners a 101 on how this NIL works, because I really do not 100% understand it. The way I thought I understood it is I'm Caitlin Clark and some big, you know, brand wants me as their spokesperson and they pay me money to do that and I keep that money. So what does the school have to do with it?
There has been a thought, because we are again in the Wild West, right? That it would be wise to have it all organized and come in-house. So in other words, right now, as I understand it, now some schools are organizing, some you're hearing about general managers or some kind of business sense of as a sports leader, they're being hired to help with this because it's really a professional operation now. I mean, it's been professional from the standpoint of making money, but now it's professional in terms of the athletes. So you'll see more and more big, especially the big, you know, the power, you know, 5-2, whatever we are now, and Big Ten, SEC, and a few others, ACC. You'll see them bringing more business types into their athletic department to help with this. So yes, if you bring it under control of the university, then you can keep an eye on it. Then you know you're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds, and this money that they're getting. And so we've got two things. We got NIL, name, image, and likeness, which I think most people agree is a good thing. If you've got an advisor, if you've got an agent, if you're 18 and you've got people to help you with that money, that's one thing. And if you don't, and the money's pouring in and you're spending it or whatever, well, we don't want that kid to fritter it all away. I mean, you want to have some semblance of figuring this out. So, and all the ramifications of so much money, such a young age, absolutely great. How do you organize it? How do you then deal with the team? If one person's making all the money and no one else is making the money, or the offensive linemen all get this small little deal at the pizza place down the street, which is better than nothing, right? So there's that piece of it. But then there's also the idea of then paying athletes. So the people who I look to and say they're smart, you know, leaders in sports are trying to figure out how to have universities stay on top of it versus having the Wild West, the gunslinger. Hey, here, kid, here's money. You know, you hear these stories about freshmen who are given $1 million. Hey, what could go wrong, right? Versus, and I'm not making fun of the freshmen, male, female, whatever, but it, mostly men, obviously, like basketball players, football players. Let's make sure they have an agent. Well, agents can be taking up to 20% of these kids' money. Of course, they have to pay taxes on it, right? So that's going to be, 40, 50, 40%, whatever it's going to be. Is anyone prepared for that? Right. That's where we are with these colleges. And quickly, schools that get it are preparing for it and trying to help. But we have got money just flowing at a time when gambling is also as easy to do as on your phone. And watch for more gambling scandals for sure. And when you've got the transfer portal, again, I love college sports and there's so much good in sports, as we were saying earlier. But you got the transfer portal, so you've got kids, and it's not just football and it's women's basketball, obviously. It's volleyball, it's lacrosse, women's lacrosse, people transferring left and right and getting deals, getting money, getting NIL deals, whatever, whatever they're being paid. What's the going rate for a women's lacrosse goalkeeper? That's a thing. Then, you've got all of that. Well, where are we headed? What do we want sports to look like? Is it possibly, I'm not going to say it's all going to come crashing down, Amy. But so far it's going great. People love the college football playoffs. When does this get to the point where gambling, you transfer, you're in, you're like a mercenary almost, right? It's not about classes. Can a gambler latch onto a kid that has no allegiance whatsoever to the school versus the kid who's been there for 4 years who would say, I would never throw three interceptions in the first, or three incompletions in the first five passes so that they could bet on that, right? Again, I'm making that scenario up, but these are real issues being discussed by college leaders and in that space, and professors and those that study this. It's that big of a deal what we've got going, throwing in the money, the transfers, the chance to gamble in every sport now. And it's just open season, and we're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds who at last we looked, you thought might be trying to get an education.
A quick break. We'll be back with Christine Brennan. It might be a political odd year, but here at the Cook Political Report, we're as busy as ever. Over the last few weeks, we've rolled out our race ratings for governor, the House, and Senate. It's not too early to think about next year's midterms, and we have everything you need to know about these races. But this is only available to Cook Political Report subscribers. So don't wait. Join us. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. Listeners can use the discount code ODD10, that's ODD, the number 10, to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is available only to new subscribers. This is a good transition, Christine, to a college, former college player who you are spending a great deal of time with, Caitlin Clark, who has really taken the country by storm, both as an Iowa collegiate player and now playing in Indiana. You are actually writing a book about her, which is coming out in July, right? You can pre-order it. I want you to talk about her and the impact that she's had. And also, if you can, kind of do the through line here for your career, because I mean, you, as we talked about, you've been covering sports for a long time, but your work on opening Augusta to women back in the early 2000s was really seminal. And now we think about that moment of women being allowed to play at a golf course in a very famous tournament. And now we see the stat you just gave me that more people were watching a women's college basketball final than were watching the men. Like, what does that all say to you?
As I said, you know, I never thought I would see it in my lifetime, and I certainly hope to be living more of this lifetime. You know, I came upon Caitlin Clark. I mean, I'd heard her name, but right here in my home, I was watching on my iPad. I was watching 2 years ago. I realized because they put it on social media. It was 2 years ago yesterday from the day we are talking. And it was watching the Indiana-Iowa women's game. I'm watching it from the Indiana perspective because all my siblings went to IU and my niece and my brother-in-law went to Indiana. So I'm just, you know, watching. Indiana's great.
By the way, a plug for another politics thing. Isn't Birch Bayh the father of Title IX?
Grandfather of Title IX, Indiana senator.
Father, Indiana governor.
Absolutely. Yes. Patsy Mink. Okay. Of course, you had Donna DeVerona. You had incredible people fighting both in the halls of Congress and not. But yes.
Putting that little, one more connection.
Without a doubt.
Indiana.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark, Title IX. Okay, so you're watching the game.
We're watching this game 2 years ago. And by the way, there's a wonderful facility that's being built, an incredible thing in Indiana called Marvella, named after Birch Bayh's wife, that's being run by the former Indiana Fever president, Allison Barber, who's now moved over to do that. And so, yeah, there's amazing things going in the Title IX space. But going to Caitlin Clark. I'm watching this game, and I think it helped that I was watching it as an observer, right? I'm not on press row. I'm not, you know, cynically thinking, you know, what time's my flight, you know? and you know me, I love my career. I love what I get to do. So I'm not ever, you know, going, I hate being at press row. But, you know, you're on deadline and, you know, there's a lot going on. I'm just enjoying this game. End of the game. All of a sudden, clock's running down and Iowa, you know, inbounds, and there's this kid, number 22, who's shooting off balance, kind of sideways, or one leg's in the air, and she throws this three, a prayer of a three from, you know, who knows where, the next, you know, the parking lot or something, and it goes in, and they win the game. And you're watching this, and I'm texting with my sisters, and we're watching, like, oh my goodness. Now, again, they won in Indiana. I won in Indiana, I'm in the sense of for them. But Iowa is like, wow. So I'm watching this and thinking, what have I just seen? And I couldn't get enough of watching that as many, many people watching the highlight over and over. And then she's running off and the fans and the team swallows her up. And she's incredibly passionate, interesting character and person to watch. And so, okay, that was that. And that, you know, I was introduced to Caitlin Clark, as many, many millions of Americans were, by a stunning three-point shot. And I think that helped inform me and understand this phenomenon that started to take over the country of what was going on here. Yes, it's basketball. Of course, she's a basketball player, Amy. But it's the high wire act at the circus. It's the trapeze act. It's the thing that your jaw just drops. And it's sports, yes, but it's entertainment. And it's very, very much like the Tiger Woods phenomenon, which I covered every day, covered the length of his career, and watched, you know, many different tournaments and covered many around the world, British Open, Masters, et cetera. And watching Tiger, where I used to say, well, I'm sure this is true, I don't know the specific grandmother that I'm now generically quoting, but, you know, the grandmother who had planned her Sunday afternoons around Tiger's tea time at the Masters. So she
that could, would be my mom.
There
honestly.
You go. So now we have
honestly,
someone.
Honestly, she knew golf, but he brought her into it. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Because you realize you're seeing a once-in-a-lifetime talent.
And here we are again.
And here we are.
And it's literally people in, so yes, I am writing a book. It's called On Her Game. I guess I should do this, the plug, the shameless plug. On Her Game.
Yes, of course.
Yes, Caitlin Clark and the Revolution in Women's Sports, being published by Scribner, part of Simon & Schuster. July 8th is the publication date, but absolutely, it's on Amazon. It's on the Simon & Schuster Scribner site as well. I'll start promoting it more soon. I'm still working with the copy editing and making changes, so it doesn't seem quite real yet as a book. But a labor of love, and I'm just so honored to be writing this book, unauthorized. But Caitlin answered 50 of my questions, and I interviewed most of her teammates, and Kate Martin, her great Iowa teammate, and her former coach, Lisa Bluter, everyone's in the book, but a lot of people are in the book, obviously, and very proud of the, you know, what I've done in the reporting, and also the Olympic snub, which I broke, the behind the scenes story, the breaking news of that is all being told for the first time, the charter flights that Caitlin Clark got. I broke that story. That's in the book. And WNBA's, sadly, lack of, you know, maybe, well, preparation for this important thing, and hence all the turmoil and some of the racial tension that we saw. All that I'm dealing with as well in the book.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's a question is, you have this generational talent that people want to watch. You also have women's sports now getting more eyeballs. We're seeing it, the professional leagues, the Women's Soccer League, and the WNBA. But do you think it's sustainable, Christine? You know, what kind of like when Tiger Woods left, didn't eyeballs drop to the PGA?
Oh, yeah, half. Yeah, half. Yeah. Absolutely. Tiger, it's back to being golf again, right? Men's golf.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah. And women's golf, while they're great players, Nelly Korda, you know, others, you know, it just doesn't resonate the same way. Great question, because yes, Caitlin Clark is the story, of course, builds and more interest. And then fascinating, you love the women's soccer team, U.S. Women's National Team. You know, there's a relationship. So answering your question, I kind of backtrack there a little. There's a relationship here. In 1999, I covered that, of course, the game, Breanna Scurry's great save, and then, of course, Brandi Chastain with the penalty kick to win it. July 10th, 1999, Rose Bowl, 90,000 people, 40 million watching on TV. You know, that was huge. That team basically then left our national consciousness until it reappeared at the Olympic Games in Sydney in 2000. They played their first game actually in Melbourne. I went down for that in September of 2000. So they were gone from July, August, September. So basically 14 months. I mean, they had friendlies and they had, you know, they were on the cover of Time, Newsweek, People, Sports Illustrated. No story's ever done that ever. Great little cocktail party conversation. That's the women's soccer team, Brandi Chastain, all those magazine covers. But otherwise gone, 14 months, because there was no pro league yet. The pro league didn't start until 2001, the first of the three leagues. Caitlin Clark, goes to the finals of that junior year. They lose to LSU, Angel Reese, Of course, that was just made for conversation and controversy, which is, I think, great in many ways for the women's game, people talking about it. Then senior year, improbably takes them back to the Final Four and to the final game. And then they lose. And Caitlin Clark, soccer team gone for 14 months. Caitlin Clark is gone for 8 days, during which time she appears on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And because then you have the draft literally 8 days after on April 15th, where she's drafted number one by the Indiana Fever. There's a pro league for her to go to. We never stop talking or thinking about her because she's never gone. It's not necessarily great that these WNBA players, the rookies, have to just go right from college right to playing, but it's fantastic for the purpose of keeping interest going.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to people who were sent in the league, NBA, WNBA, saying, oh, they were surprised that like there were sellouts. And I was like, weren't you paying attention junior, senior year? And because she's in the Midwest, you can drive from Iowa to Indianapolis. It's Big Ten country. They know her. Indy's a perfect spot. You don't want to put her in LA or New York or Chicago. No, no, no. Indy. She loves the Midwest. They love her. Also, the Pacers and Fever, probably the best organization of NBA, WNBA working together. Mm. So you have the entire merchandising, social media force of an NBA team, Pacers, working with the fever. So they're immediately ready to just blast this out. And you've got the whole, you know, they're selling out, and it's just, I think they didn't sell out two games. Otherwise, they sold everything. And she's selling out all the arenas.
Right. Oh, she's also selling out stadiums across the country, right?
Right. So here in D.C., right, the Mystics yeah. are in the 4,200-seat arena, which was seen as a good size, right, for the WNBA to show how, you know, it's a small bandbox. I actually like it. But then they moved to the 20,000-seat Capital One Arena for the two Fever games. They also did, I think, for one Chicago game where they had half the crowd that Caitlin got the next night. And, you know, so you've got this. There's that piece of it. You also mentioned the drop in golf. Tiger Woods, greatest golfer ever. I mean, I think, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, you know, whatever. Tiger's fantastic golfer. He never really wanted to sign autographs until now that he's closing in on 50. And has had these car accidents, and he realizes his mortality, and he gets it. He's a much nicer person now, and that's, you know, doesn't matter one way or the other. He was a great golfer, but he never, you know, wanted to really, he didn't think about growing the game, right? He never leaned into race, never. He ran away from that. You could argue that was something he was thinking about because golf is such a lily white sport, right? I'm not saying he was wrong or right. He just didn't do it. He didn't want to do it and just didn't want to give time to sign autographs. Phil Mickelson would be the one wading into the kids. Tiger would be just walking with blinders on going to the locker room or whatever. His right. That's okay. Compare and contrast. Caitlin, before games, after games, by the way, 22 versus Tiger into his 30s and 40s. Caitlin Clark, 22 going on 40 or 50. I mean, remarkable. People, by the way, if you like her, if you met her, you would love her. I mean, it's one of those athletes where you meet and you go.
What you see is what you get, what you're
saying. And even better.
There's not a private.
Even better.
Caitlin, that people behind her back are like, actually.
No, even better.
She's not like this.
Absolute delight. She answers questions and then we'll go off on tangents to talk about other things she wants to talk about. I mean, name a pro athlete who does that. Just absolutely terrific. What a great role model. But here she is diving into. Do the autographs before games, after games, kids line up. She does this. Willing. She loves it. She talks about how much she loves it and looks at those in those girls' eyes and those boys' eyes. And she talks about girls and boys, both. And she's doing all that. So she's already growing the women's game. Going back to your question about where does this go? I think we will have girls and boys who are totally driven by their love of Caitlin Clark for generations. Those five-year-old kids I saw when I was, because then I was on the road just with, you know, covering all the Fever games after the Olympics for this book, you know, that they're everywhere. And mom and dad, you know, aunts, uncles, mom, whoever is bringing them to games with the 22 jerseys, boys in 22 jerseys as never, men, big brutes, you know, big bros in 22 jerseys. We never would have seen that. Not even with Mia Hamm or Randy or Brianna, you know, nothing like Megan Rapinoe, nothing like that. So that, to me, it has to last. And because Caitlin is working so hard to make it last, complete opposite. Literally the complete opposite of the Tiger Woods strategy, which was to focus on himself, not focus on any cultural issues. And the result is golf is, we can see it when you turn on men's golf any weekend versus what I think basketball is going to look like because of Caitlin Clark, really for generations to come.
That's a really interesting point. And it also speaks to something else I wanted to get at with you, which is athletes' role in both the growing the game, but also their voice, right? That they are these brand ambassadors, but increasingly they've also become, you know, part of our cultural conversation, certainly in ways that I don't remember seeing when I was growing up, 70s, 80s. You did not have players wading in as frequently into some of these conversations. And I'm curious, you know, we saw in the first Trump administration, you had Colin Kaepernick and taking the knee. And then, of course, Mike Pence showing up at the football game there just to show his displeasure with that. And that became a whole running debate politically. You had NBA, WNBA players wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. You had Megan Rapinoe after the World Cup victories saying, there's no way I'm going to the White House, making her opinions very clear. And Christine, we're only, 30 days into this administration. We already saw the Four Nation hockey tournament, which, by the way, I had no idea was even a thing until you see the clips of it, of the American anthem getting booed in Canada, and then fights breaking out on the ice between the Canadian and American players. And I think, is this what we should expect for the next 4 years, whether it is an international tournament or on our courts and fields here?
I'm afraid so, Amy. I think we should expect it. You can make a case that there's no president who has been more linked to sports and more sports than Donald Trump. Obviously, Gerald Ford played football at Michigan. Ronald Reagan played football. Over the years, of course, many presidents, George H.W. Bush.
Played baseball.
Right. So they played sports. A lot of them, Eisenhower played golf. Bill Clinton played golf. Of course. I mean, but in terms of the business of sports and being interwoven into the structure of sports in our country, that's Trump. I mean, it really, really is. When you consider he wanted to be an NFL owner and they never wanted him, which drove him, I'm sure, drives him to this day, as we know about him. I have no idea, but I'm guessing. USFL, he owned a team in the USFL. And that's when I'm pretty sure I interviewed him then, because I was doing some coverage of the USFL, which was one of those leagues that popped up and then went away in football. He ran something, you'll appreciate this, as a cyclist. I hope your viewers and listeners know what a great athlete you are, Amy Walter. We'll next episode, right?
Sure.
Amy Walter. Okay. Does sports and talks about it. But I know you love to cycle. And so there was something called, don't laugh, you're going to laugh the moment I say this, Tour de Trump, that was in New Jersey, in Atlantic City. And I was at the Washington Post then. And I covered it. And I don't know if this is one of those things I dreamed. I could just look it up. or it happened, so I'm going to say it. But please, everyone, don't get mad at me if I'm wrong. I think Lance Armstrong won it. Now, again, I could have dreamed that, but if that's true, and as a journalist, I should just responsibly just check. So I apologize for that.
Yeah, but some things are too good to double check.
No, right, exactly.
Right? Good of a story.
If, in fact, Lance Armstrong won the Tour de France, I mean, come on. So there's that, because we know how disgraced, sadly, tragically, that Lance Armstrong did it all to himself. Awful. Yeah. So, okay, there's that. Golf, owning golf courses. 2017, I went up to Bedminster and I was there for a week, credentialed, as a journalist, of course, to cover the U.S. Women's Open golf tournament at Bedminster. Donald Trump was hosting the crown jewel of women's golf. And I did ask every single woman that came in there, from Michelle Wee to Julie Inkster to you name it, Lexi Thompson. I asked, what's your thought? What's your opinion on playing golf and playing the crown jewel of women's golf, the U.S. Open, at the golf course owned by a man who's bragged about sexually assaulting women? That's journalism. People get mad at my questions. Obviously, the WNBA got mad at some question, the players did. That's journalism, folks. You ask those questions. I'm not there for friends. I'm to make friends. I'm there to do my job for the readers and viewers or whatever. So anyway, but Trump is just so linked, Amy, to sports in our country, and he loves it. And of course, it allows him to stand there in the arena and get cheered or booed or whatever. So that's his whole thing. So to the point that you're making, moving forward here with him, and I know you said this as we were kind of chatting about this yesterday, you've got the Men's World Cup next year, right? 2026, U.S., also Canada and Mexico, that'll be interesting, hosting the World Cup. But U.S. is certainly tons of games will be in the U.S. And so he's going to want to be at that final, which is in New Jersey. I'm pretty sure it's there anyway. He's going to want to be there for that. So will a lot of other, obviously the presidents or prime ministers or whatever of the two countries that are in it. And I'm sure Canada, Mexico will also send representatives, if not their leaders. So there's that. Then just 2 years after that, the 2028 Olympic Games, of course, return to Los Angeles. And Donald Trump will be the person, if he wants to be, but it's usually almost always a president or a leader, opening the 2028 Los Angeles Olympic Games. So I would expect that we would see what we saw the first term. You know, I think that, you know, when he called all the football players, you know, he said, get those SOBs off the field. He was saying that during the Alabama Senate race that he was down and, you know, campaigning for someone. I was in the green room at CNN, where you've been a million times, and I was ready to go on Don Lemon's show to talk about something. And immediately we're like, oh, no, we're not, whatever we were going to talk about, we are talking.
Right. Now we have to talk about this.
And sure enough, there were I could see on social media the players were just you know, exploding, you know, being called SOBs, black, you know, majority black league being called SOBs. And sure enough, there was there were mass protests on the Sunday and the with the anthem and what have you. Interesting little note that will be in on her game. I have a whole chapter on the WNBA because I think it's very important to show, you know, this is a 74% black league or black and or mixed race. And it has always been that. And that's the backdrop upon which Caitlin Clark entered the league. And it's, of course, I'm covering all that. I've written columns about Brittany Griner and about things about the league and talked about it since 99. So that's in the book. And when we think of Kaepernick, right, we think, well, he was the first, right? Well, the WNBA players, the Minnesota Lynx, were actually 6 weeks ahead of Kaepernick on starting to protest the deaths of the of black men at the hand of police officers. So, but no one knew that because no one was paying attention to the WNBA. And I make all that those points in the book just to show the advocacy that the WNBA, frankly, hasn't gotten a lot of credit for. I can't tell you the number of times I'll go on CNN or something, and we're talking about, well, the NBA players in the bubble, blah, blah, blah. And actually, the WNBA players in the bubble were doing this first or at the same time. And they've just gotten short shrift, which is why, again, having a Caitlin Clark, an attention magnet, bringing those eyeballs so that all the players, including these amazing black women who never got the attention they deserve, whether their advocacy, agree or disagree with their advocacy, just nonetheless, they're putting themselves out there to the point you've asked me about, but also their play. Caitlin Clark brings the eyeballs so that they all get the attention as well, which is, of course, what one of the main points I made about the Olympic team. So,
do you think there is going to be pressure then on Caitlin Clark as we get into these next 4 years if Trump does say those same things about the WNBA or, you know, again, women's role, whatever it is, whatever the topic is, she has cultivated this image of being somebody who could go anywhere in America. She can go to red America. She can go to blue America. Everybody loves her. Would she put that on the line to get involved in this?
You know, I think she might. She has never shied away from a tough question. I know because, I mean, probably, I mean, I have no idea. I can't rank the questions she's received this year. But I did ask her, you may recall that Taylor Swift, right after the first and only presidential debate, Taylor Swift went on her Instagram account and talked about voting, register to vote, and also endorsed Kamala Harris for president. One of the many people, millions, to like that Instagram post was Caitlin Clark. I mean, on one level, who cares, right? I mean, of course, who cares? She can do whatever she wants. I didn't even see the post, but I saw some of our colleagues and friends on X tweeting about who had liked the post within a few minutes. Oprah Winfrey, Kylie Kelsey, Jennifer Aniston, Caitlin Clark. So whether she meant to or not, whether any of us cares or not, now this had become news. Should it be news? I'll leave it to be determined whether you think that's news or not. It became part of the conversation. The next day, I flew to Indy, and it was a game that night, and of course I was covering it for the book, and I was in the press conferences, and I asked Caitlin, I said, you liked a tweet or a Instagram post that got a lot of attention, and I'm curious what that post meant to you from Taylor Swift, And are you potentially going to be endorsing Kamala Harris for President of the United States? And I got a lot of people, well, I mean, of course, we all get criticism on social media, so that's fine. Like, as long as you're breathing, you'll get criticism. So people are like, how dare you ask her before the big Las Vegas game that night? Like, you know, well, it's my job to do this, and that's what I do. Caitlin never flinched. Again, she's 22 years old. I mean, I've dealt with people double her age who run away from questions or get mad or scowl or, you know, no, I'm throw their football helmet or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's happened. I've had, you know, zillions of these things happen over the years. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm asking a question that everyone was asking, you know. Is she for Kamala Harris? Does that what that like means? Or did she like
right,
the
or
voting?
Is it, I like my friend Taylor, right? Like,
right. And we know she's a Swiftie, and we saw in, you know, in January she's hanging out in, I think it was early January, they in the box with Taylor Swift. You know, oh, it's all great. It's all fine. But again, you ask questions so that you give the athlete the opportunity to answer it and take it whichever way they want to, which is what I did with Dejanay Carrington, which is what I'll do with any athlete anytime. And so with Caitlin, again, class, grace, looks me in the eye, answers. And she took the voting part and the, you know, registered to vote and vote that she had vote in, and she could vote in the first in 2020 and now 2024. And it's important and people should, you know, get information and basically and echoed that piece of what Taylor Swift had written and didn't answer my second part of the question. And I, of course, I had no follow up and I didn't would have never wanted to follow up. She had every right to answer it as she wanted. It was a perfectly good answer. And there you go. So I don't know, and she would never say, because she just takes the high road every time, every single time, Amy. This 20, now 23-year-old takes the high road. I've never seen anyone handle themselves in the spotlight like that. And I've, you know, I've covered a lot of young athletes in the spotlight at the Olympics and whatever, but for also for continual, like, 12 straight months of spotlight, which is what she had, and she still does in many ways. So I will say this. She's never shied away from ever looking you in the eye and answering your question. We know from the Time Magazine interview she did that she did talk about white privilege, and she went further than she has before on some of those issues that I think she's been criticized from black players or generally, you know, from those who would want her to be diving more into the racial issues. Right. But it's also important to mention, in total fairness to Caitlin Clark, when she went on Saturday Night Live, which is a great audience, it's much more than just sports, right? She talked about the players thanking them for opening, allowing, you know, her to walk through the doors that she can walk through now. And every name she mentioned was black, from Maya Moore to Dawn Staley, Cheryl Swoops, there were about five or six. On Saturday Night Live, she did that. She wasn't asked about it. So people are like, oh, well, she only answers when she's asked about things. And again, I'm not here to defend Caitlin Clark or not defend. I'm just here to tell the truth in that sense. That, and then she was asked about it in June, and she followed up with a great answer. Don't use my name. Basically, these were, you know, paraphrasing. Don't use me for your agendas, you know, and for hate and for all these players deserve respect. Uh-huh. So she has done that. I think your question is a very valid one, and I'm glad we're talking about it. She has PR people. I am not one, clearly. Unauthorized biography, for sure. but I'm a journalist. But it is, there is this sense that she's avoided it. And I would say she hasn't avoided it. And everyone wants her to have the answer that they exactly want for her. I go back to that Saturday Night Live thing. Everyone, if you doubt, look it up. This woman is on Saturday Night Live, and she is speaking one name after another, thanking them for allowing her to have the career she has in the WNBA, which is about to happen because she'll be drafted in a day or so. And every single one of them was black. And she is a class act all the way. But yes, I would not be surprised at all if she speaks out. But I also think she's smart enough to understand and work her way, again, with her agent and her family, mom and dad, her brothers, huge in her life, to work her way through it and handle it in the classy and dignified way that she handles everything.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to getting into this, being able to read this. Can I get my pre-order in?
You can get your pre-order in. Now, you know, we live about 20 minutes apart, so.
Maybe I can, okay, my pre-order can come delivered.
I think I might have a special delivery in when these books arrive in June.
I am very excited.
Thank you. And I am, it's an honor. It's a total honor at this moment, you know, in sports to see this happen. And the WNBA waiting for this moment, and here it is. And yeah, let's hope it continues, because it's, even if they've had trouble, there's no joy in that for me reporting it, right? That if there's some issues or stops and starts or they weren't quite prepared, you know, like, come on, be prepared. You know, let's see women really shine and not fight and not have issues and not allow the guys and, you know, sports media to go after, whatever. And I think we'll see the second year, I hope, be smoother. You're already seeing it, by the way, for Indiana Fever fans. They are reloading, or they are loading. You know, they've changed their entire leadership, and they brought in some great veterans, and they want to win the title. The old line that I don't think you or I made up, a rising tide lifts all boats. That is exactly where the WNBA and all of women's sports is. Because, yeah, volleyball, you know, Olympic sports, women dominating the Olympics, you know, of course, for the U.S., on and on, four straight Olympics where women have won the most gold medals, like in most medals over like 60% of the U.S. medals, 58% won by women. You know, this is the golden age for women's sports in this country. And it's absolutely a delight and an honor to chronicle it, for sure.
We look forward to reading more about both this and all the other great coverage of our vast world of sports.
Thanks. Thank you, Amy. You're the best. Great honor to be with you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to The Odd Years. If you liked what you heard or want to make a suggestion, leave us a review or recommend us to a friend. You are our best way to get the word out about what we do. And if you want more from the Cook Political Report, consider becoming a subscriber. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. Listeners can use the discount code ODD10, O-D-D, the number 10, to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is available only to new subscribers. The Odd Years is brought to you by the Cook Political Report and is produced by Becca Kaufman. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.